It's been said that every quilt tells a story, and it's so true. But I also believe every quilter has a story to tell. I wanted to hear about the people behind these wonderful quilts and thought you'd enjoy hearing about their lives also. Welcome to A Quilter's Life. Besides being in quilting groups, I'm also in a group for podcasters so that I can learn how to do better in making this podcast for you. A few weeks back, the podcaster group had Kathy Lipp as a special speaker. When she saw that A Quilter's Life was the name of my podcast, she mentioned that her mother made wonderful quilts. So that was my introduction to Connie Richardson. Connie was so gracious to share her story with us. She has been quilting for over 30 years and has great tips for us to learn from. Oh, and if you're looking to get yourself organized, her daughter, Kathy, is a speaker, podcaster, and author of 20 books on being clutter-free. There's more information about Kathy on the website kathylipp.com. That's kathylipp.com. Connie, thanks so much for joining me on A Quilter's Life.
Oh, I'm happy to be here.
Glad to hear it. Let's start with, where were you born and raised?
I was born in Kansas City, Missouri. Right after I was born, I was put up for adoption. And I don't know how it worked because the people that I knew as my parents were there right away and adopted me. But at that time, they wouldn't let you go home with them. You had to stay like in an orphanage for a couple of months. So it was like the middle of August before I went home with them. They were an older couple and had not been successful in trying to have a baby. So I grew up in Kansas City. We moved quite a bit. At one time when I was probably kindergarten, well, I know I was kindergarten age, we moved to South Dakota and started kindergarten there and went to quite a few schools because of the constant moving. So that's a lot of what happened when I was young.
Wow, moving that far north. What did you think of those cold winters?
Well, Kansas City has cold winters also. We have snow, and it was probably colder up there, but probably not that much. So, yeah, I remember in high school, we had the main high school building, and they were building other high schools at that time. But we had to walk outside to go to an elementary school or another school for different classes besides the main high school. And, you know, you didn't necessarily want to carry a jacket around all day. So, you know, we'd hike out there in the snow and run to classes.
Oh, wow.
So, yeah.
While growing up, did you have a special childhood memory?
I think that was it.
Okay.
Moving to so many different schools and having to, you know, get new friends.
Yeah. It's
hard to leave the old ones. And yeah, so I think that probably was one of my biggest memories. I was involved in music. I took violin lessons, and I played in orchestra through junior high and high school. And then probably sophomore year, I tried out for Kansas City Youth Symphony and was in that for about 4 years and developed a lot of friendships there, but have not followed through with music.
That was going to be my next question. Do you get to play it at all anymore?
No, I don't. You know, you get kids and all their activities, and that kind of quelched it for me.
Yeah. I'm seeing my daughter go through the same thing with her violin. I don't think she's picked it up for years.
Well, I still have it, but
yeah. You know where it is.
Mm-hmm.
Well, after high school, did you go on to another school or go right into
a job?
No,
well, I went to Kansas City Junior College for a while, but I do not have a college degree or, you know, any big academic background.
And did you have employment?
Yes. I went to work in Kansas City at Owens Corning Fiberglass, and then I got married and moved to California and went to an Owens Corning Fiberglass at Santa Clara. Then I wasn't there very long because I got pregnant. And, you know, it was kind of the last hired, the first to go out the door. Mm-hmm. Then I didn't work for a while during the pregnancy and even for a couple of years after I had my first child. Well, after I had my second child, actually. And then the rest of my employment was through counties. I worked at San Mateo County in California for the district attorney's office. I was a clerk. Then we moved to San Jose, and I didn't work for a couple of years. Then I went to work for social services, aka the welfare department. I was a clerk when I started, but soon after that, I took a test to become an eligibility worker. And what that means, you either carried on a caseload, and eventually I took another test, and I determined eligibility for different aid types. I worked the last 14 years at a hospital in San Jose and did eligibility for Medi-Cal, which in other parts of the country is Medicaid, I believe. Mm-hmm. But out here, it's Medi-Cal, and did that until I retired in 2003.
Oh, wow.
They implemented a system for Medi-Cal throughout the state. I am technologically challenged, was then and am now. So my husband was a number of years older than I was, and it was getting kind of rough seeing him laying in bed and me getting up and going to work all the time. So kind of crunched the numbers to see if we could make it if I was not working. I had a retirement from the state. It would have been a higher amount had I worked longer, but it seemed more inviting to get on with life. So we lived in San Jose, and prices of housing was going up extremely high. So we were able to sell the house in San Jose, and we moved up to a place called Mather. And it's outside of Sacramento. There used to be a Mather Air Force Base, but it was decommissioned quite a few years ago, and they built this tract of houses on it. So that's where we ended up. And it was close enough, you know, if we wanted to go see the kids that were in San Jose, we had no problem doing that. Mm-hmm. So it was a good place.
Yeah.
Kind of out in the boonies, but that was okay.
Yeah, it's good to be out sometimes.
We got a grocery store about 4 years ago, which was very exciting. Otherwise, we'd have to go about 8 miles to get to a grocery store. So 3 miles was a treat.
Isn't it fun how these things that we take for granted, other people don't have, or we just, when we get it, we realize, wow.
That is yeah. Mm-hmm.
Besides quilting, are there other crafts you do or have done?
Probably knitting was my first thing. I kind of taught myself how to knit. I had a Coates and Clark, and I remember looking at it. It was like a chartreuse and orange little pamphlet thing. And I watched, you know, the pictures and figured out what I had to do with the needles and threads and did knitting for quite a few years. The week that Kennedy was shot, there was a big sale at a department store on yarn. You know, they don't carry anything like that in department stores anymore, but back in the day, they sure did. And so I didn't have a car at that time. I went on the bus, even though everybody was off the streets, I wasn't going to miss out on this sale. And I had picked out a pattern of what I wanted to do, and it was kind of a sweater coat, and it had a hood. And my mother, when I got home, she was just floored. You know, I spent that much money, and I had kind of a history of not always completing things. That's only deteriorated. And so I literally spent the weekend in front of the TV with all that was happening with Kennedy. And I almost finished that sweater that weekend.
Wow.
And I really enjoyed it. I remember buying a kit that had yarn and then it had fabric to make like what was called a dyed to match outfit, you know, where the skirt and the sweater pretty much matched. And I made sweaters, you know, for my parents. I made one for my husband. I made one for my son who wasn't very fond of it. And I still have a couple of what I made for myself.
Oh, nice. Sounds like they lasted then.
Yeah. I probably stopped because, you know, there's only one movement in knitting. And my neck and shoulders would hurt after a while. So I really didn't carry that on. I've made a couple of baby blankets and things like that since, but no real commitment to finishing anything.
Mm-hmm. Besides crafts, do you have other hobbies?
Not really. A lot of my friends have these embroidery machines, which I consider a hobby in itself, but it's expensive. First of all, the machines, and then buying the programs and all the thread that goes with it. So that's not something I've done yet.
Yeah. Sometimes when I've said to people, well, sometimes hobbies are like baking or something, they're like, no, that's a chore.
Well, I do bake a lot of cookies at Christmas time.
Uh-huh.
A couple of years ago, we were in the depths of the pandemic. I know you know my daughter. She lives about 50 miles from me up in the mountains. And she had prepared meals for all of my grandkids. We went down to the San Jose area, and I had baked all my cookies and wrapped them up in, you know, rather large size tins. And we went down there, and there was social distancing, so we just dropped off the meal and their presents. We made the rounds and came back up here all within one day. And then the next day, it was Christmas Eve, I believe. And we all sat down, and my son-in-law set up a Zoom for the family. So we sat and ate our Christmas Eve dinner and opened our presents with each other. So that was rather fantastic considering how everything was pretty locked up. So it was a special thing to have him be able to do that for us.
That's wonderful that you were able to get together remotely, even all that was going on.
Yeah, it meant a lot.
Mm-hmm. Can you tell me about how you got into quilting or who introduced you to quilting?
I think it was probably 76, 77. I started taking a class at Parks and Recreation. My grandmother, who died in 1960, was an avid quilter. She had a little treadle machine, and she worked that thing to death. She had 8 children, I think 22 grandchildren, and I know all of us got a quilt. And then I don't know about the ones that came after that. So that was kind of intriguing, seeing her sitting there with her pedal machine, and I don't think she needed any more exercise after doing that. Then in the Parks and Recreation class, I had to stop because we sold our house and moved. a house that we stayed in for 26 years, I might add. We didn't move a lot. At that point, I didn't do anything else about quilting. I remember there was a quilt shop not far from us, and I would go in and look. Then my daughter got pregnant with my first grandchild, and I decided I'm making a quilt for my grandbaby. So I took a class locally. The class was hand piecing. Then the only thing that we did with the sewing machine was put the sashing on and the binding on, but it was hand quilted and hand pieced. I still have it. Then I was ready to forge on and make this quilt for my new grandbaby. And that was the beginning of that. I haven't put it down since then. When I still continued to work, let's see, he was born in 1990, and I worked to 2003, so 13 years after that, then I was really able to do things. The quilt guild that I joined in San Jose had 1 month, it was in the mornings, and the next month, it was in the evenings. And I worked close to where it was held. So a lot of times I'd ask for vacation when they were doing a class, and I would take the class. And then when we moved up here to Mather, then it really took hold. I had time, so I spent a lot of time doing that and joined two guilds up here. I'm only in one now. It's a morning guild, and I am of the age where it's difficult to drive at night. So this is good. We meet every third Wednesday, and it's close to 20 miles away from me, but it's morning and it's a good group of people, and I enjoy their company, and it's great.
Yeah, it's great to get together.
And a couple of offshoots of that, a small groups that I attend. One group meets every Friday, and then the place that we meet is at a quilt shop, and she has just recently rented another part of this little strip mall, and it was a ballet studio. So now she has that all set up for classes and different groups to meet in there. So she's got a little empire going. It's good because so many quilt shops out here are closing.
Yeah.
I imagine that's everywhere.
Yeah, I've seen several close here locally, but then I see another expanding, like you're saying. So it's interesting.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I was at one today that's closing, but I had taken a quilt down there to have it quilted, and it was ready. So I went down and picked up, and I didn't buy much fabric. I bought 2.5 yards. I'm constraining myself. I think I live in a rather large home, and I think, why is there not more storage in this house? Then I think I've got 2.5 closets full of fabric.
Oh, wow. So I take it you're not the quilter that just buys for the next quilt she's making. You've bought fabric you like.
Yes. There was a quilt and craft shop store up here. They had a number of places throughout Northern California, and gradually they went out of business. But this one group that I belong to held our meetings, our sit and sew there. And they always had these huge tables full of good fabric, you know, Moda and all the good stuff. And they'd put them on sale at half off. And that's where I kind of got in trouble.
It's hard to walk past that.
Yeah. I am trying so hard now to finish projects. It's pretty sad how many unfinished projects I have. So I'm trying not to start anything new this year. Maybe in a couple of months I may do something new, but so far I have just been doing old things. And it's feeling somewhat satisfying. I don't know that I'll get all that much done. I have given a number of things. At our quilt guild, we have a free table. And some of my smaller unfinished projects, I've made notes on it and put it on the free table. And as far as I can tell, it's been pretty much snapped up. And then I gave one woman in our guild who does nothing but what we call community service quilts, quilts that are given away to people in need. And all she does is quilts for them. And so I have given her a lot of fabric. And then recently I probably got rid of 45 to 50 books. So I'm trying very hard to pare down.
Yeah. Little bit by little bit.
Yeah. We're having a quilt show this weekend on Friday and Saturday. So I have four quilts in it. One is not finished yet. I was working on it when you called. I don't have a lot to do on it. I have done quite a bit of embroidery. My husband was unable to drive after 2005. He passed away in 2014. So all those years he couldn't drive. I made a commitment to him that I would take him to a stamp club meeting on every Wednesday evening. So I sat in the parking lot for about 2.5 hours every Wednesday evening, and I got a lot of embroidery done. Embroidery is wonderful. You know, you can take it, and if you have 10 minutes, you can get something accomplished.
Mm-hmm.
So I have a couple of quilts hanging here in my sewing room that are all embroidery. One's red work, and one is 50 styled dresses. It's pretty cute.
Oh, wow. Those sound really cute.
And then the one that I'm working on right now is something that I found in my mother's stuff when she passed away. It's little nursery rhyme characters. It had on the fabric the colors that you would use, but I just did red work. Then I didn't have to think. So there were three panels of four, and on the panel, it was from JCPenney, and the price was 19 cents. So that really got my curiosity up. When was this bought? Or, you know, if she got it off of a rummage sale or something. And so I went to my local Pennies and asked them, you know, if they had any way of checking this. Then I went to Missouri Star in Hamilton, Missouri. I think that that's where Penny's may have been born, or that's where his first store was. I'm not sure what. But they had a JCPenney museum there. So I went and talked to those people about it, and they tried to do some research and couldn't come up with anything. So it's still a mystery to me. But I'm imagining it was probably early 50s or in the 40s to get something like that cheap.
Wow. It's going to be really darling, though, with you doing it in red work.
Yeah, I hope it seems to have turned out okay. So one other thing that I have tried, the last couple of things that have had embroidery, is this little quilt, and then I went to a retreat at Crabapple Hill and had a little embroidery project there. And I have learned, I'm sure other people know this, but to use a piece of Warm and Natural or 80-20 and then top that with a piece of wool, then when you quilt around the motifs, it really makes them pop out with that wool in there.
Hmm. That's interesting.
Yeah, I really like the effect of it. You know, the red work is what it is, but the other one, I've colored the embroidery area. It's flowers. It denotes summer, fall, winter, spring. And that really stands out.
Yeah.
I shadowed around the motif and with the wool, it really pops. I like the effect.
That would be so neat to see. Now, whether you made it or someone else made it, do you have a favorite quilt?
I don't think I do. You know, I pretty much like all of them if they get finished.
Is there a pattern you prefer to work on?
You know, I have an AccuQuilt, which is a blessing. And I've got quite a few of the little magazines that came from Missouri Star. So I've used those a lot to determine what I might make. I'm looking at a quilt right now. You asked if I have a favorite. Mm-hmm. I sure do like this one. It's a spider quilt. And it's done in 30s fabrics. It has a black border around the little quilted part. And then kind of bright yellow. And I just like the colors. I like 30s. Well, there's not much fabric I don't like. But I like the way this yellow really stands out with the black around the quilting part.
Yeah, that would be a great contrast.
Mm-hmm. I like yellow. Mm-hmm. A lot of my quilts have yellow in it. I have another quilt in front of me. I think at a lot of quilt shows, the things that get ribbons are definitely good quilts. But I also think it's where it's placed in the show. This is a wall hanging, and it's of an elephant. It's like stained glass. And that was hanging at the end of one of the racks. I think it probably got a lot more attention from where it was hanging instead of in the middle of a whole bunch of other lovely quilts. The quilt guild that I belong to, they don't have professional judges. It's just what the people that come to the quilt show mm-hmm. vote on.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's kind of fun. And just recently, I worked with another lady at church, and we had done a quilt a couple of years ago for Christmas. It was a panel of the nativity scene. She is a marvelous piecer. Absolutely impeccable. You know, if she has to take it out five times, she will before she'll let anything go by her. And so she did the piecing on it, and I did the quilting. I just have, well, I have my regular sewing machines, and then I do have an HQ Sweet 16. Which is just a free motion quilt. It's an industrial machine, and it's a sit down. I got bad knees. I can't stand and do all that stuff. So I got a package of thread that came with it, several different kinds, and I had a gold thread. This nativity was all the figures were etched out in gold. So my quilting was just simply quilting in that gold. And so there was a lot of gold on that. And it looked really nice. They still use it at church at Christmas time. So I decided we needed to do one for Easter. So we found a pattern that we loved, and it looked too hard to get done in just a small amount of time that we had. So she found another pattern that was a stained glass cross. It was from Switzerland, so it was ordered, didn't come. Her daughter did the ordering, so she contacted them. They sent a file with the pattern on the computer, and when she got it, there was a one-inch square at the bottom that was like a scale, you know, to size things up. It was off. And so the whole quilt, the cross was off. But she made adjustments and got it done. I think that they mailed that pattern when they got the call or email from her daughter. because probably within a week we had the pattern. But it all turned out well, and I did invisible thread around all the black of the stained glass, and then I did little circles. I used quarter to draw circles. There was a black border, and then there was a blue border out of that, and I did my little squiggle that I do on a lot of my quilting. So it was hung last Saturday and quite well received.
Nice. It's great to be able to contribute that way.
Yeah, it is. I'm thinking, what can we do for another season? I don't think they want a turkey up there for Thanksgiving.
Probably not.
Maybe a cornucopia.
Yeah, that would work. When you're making your quilts, do you have a favorite part of the process, or do you like each step as you go along?
You know, I think it's fun gathering the fabrics. I look at my stash to see what I have. And if I go on a shop hop, I remember going on one, and I wanted to make a blue and yellow quilt. So at each quilt shop we stopped at, I might buy, you know, three or four fat quarters. And eventually, at the end of the shop hop, I would probably have enough to make the quilt with what I have already at home. And then on vacations, my daughter and son-in-law, they went with me, but they gave me a trip to Alaska for a significant birthday a couple of years back, and a quilting friend went. The quilt shops in Alaska are amazing. And I think I deposited about $400 to help the economy up there. I just finished one, and it's going into the quilt show. So, you know, that was a great deal of fun. When I've gone on other trips, again, a few years ago, I went back to Pennsylvania to the Amish country. Mm-hmm. And there I had specific things that I was looking for. I think that's kind of a good idea because you want to buy something that you remember, and doing something like that, you've got it and you've accomplished something. So I like that. And then I really like to do the binding because that means it's done. But I have so many things that I've started and they are not finished.
Yeah.
But then I try to look at it like, if I need a present, it's half done.
True. Now my fun question. What was your worst quilting experience?
Well, you know, I've been doing this for so long. What, 32 years? I really don't remember. I'm sure there were horrible things, but something that happened recently, I was in one of my finishing up the quilt modes. And I had this darling little baby quilt. I try to keep a finished baby quilt on hand because you never know when a baby's going to come. And so I have one ready. So this baby quilt, I had yellow borders on it. And I frequently use a friction pin to draw a design and then quilt it. Well, it wasn't a friction pin.
Uh-oh.
So one border has the friction pin. The other three, I took them off, and I will be redoing those.
Oh, wow.
So something that my church quilting friend had shown me, she got like a clipper, a man's clipper for a beard.
Mm-hmm.
It was, the brand name was Wahl, W-A-H-L, I believe. And she showed me that you get started taking quilt apart and you just run that little clipper thing down the seam. And like in 2 minutes, I had a border off.
Wow. I was just on a call last night and someone mentioned that. I had not heard of it before then.
I remember a friend in the Quilt Guild, and she had something, and I don't know if this was truly the name of it, but it's been several years ago, and she had it, and she called it Jack the Ripper.
Oh, I thought that was the seam ripper. I thought a lot of people called just a seam ripper Jack the Ripper.
Well, but the one she had was like this shaving thing.
Interesting.
And I don't know if that was really the name of it, but, you know, taking a seam out can take a long time. I tried to use it on some other quilting that, you know, that was random type quilting, and it doesn't work on that. But boy, on a seam, a straight seam, you just rip through that.
Wow. It sounds interesting.
Very.
So, Connie, why do you think you make quilts rather than spending your time doing something else?
I guess I love it. You know, I come up here in my sewing room. I've got a big sewing room. I have a rather large house. And a big sewing room just means that you've got more places to stack things up, I think. But I come up here, I turn my TV on, I sit down at my machine or just at my table doing something, and tension just goes away. It's my thing.
Mm-hmm.
So at this point of life, I live by myself. I have a frequent visitor. My daughter and son-in-law live up in the mountains, as I had said, and they come down here once a week. They may be moving in for a couple of weeks. They've had damage to their house from a storm, probably the end of December, but really didn't realize it until this last week when they had a storm and it came through their walls and soaked their carpet and all.
Oh, no.
So they're having craftspeople up there fixing things, and they come in tow with a cat and a dog and five chickens. I have a chicken coop now in my backyard, and I have two cats, and one cat is not really nice to the rest of them, and the other one just goes under the bed and kind of stays there. Yeah, so they're at my house. They come once a week. Even if they don't stay, sometimes they stay overnight, and that's just the way it is. So I enjoy it. You know, it's nice to have somebody in the house once in a while. I think I sleep better when they're here.
Yeah.
In fact, one of my little friends just came to visit me on my lap. Cats love quilts.
That's what I understand.
You put one on a table, they're on top of it.
It's just for them, right?
Yeah.
Who do you usually make your quilts for?
That's kind of tough. You know, I see something that I like and I make it. It's not necessarily for anybody. My daughter has this place, the home that they live in, but she has like little mini retreats there. So there's a lot of people in and out. And she has a lot of my quilts that she decorates with. She probably has 20 of them. I give them away. One of my granddaughters was here a few months ago, and I said, "Do you need a quilt?" And she said, "Sure, I'll always take one of your quilts." So all the grandkids have a quilt. Some of them have more. My son-in-law, Roger, Kathy and Roger, this is their second marriage, and they each have two children.
Mm-hmm.
And the kids were teenagers when they married. And Roger's son, good kid, I say kid, he's now in his 30s, I made him a quilt. He was a hockey player, so I made him a quilt that had hockey players on it. And he called me and he said, "Thank you so much for the quilt. Nobody has ever done anything like that for me." So, you know, things like that make you feel really good.
Yeah.
But I just do them because I like them. And once in a while, I'll make one in particular for somebody. But generally, it's just because I found something I like and I want to do it.
What quilting tip would you give to others?
Don't do what I do. You know, I have a lot of pictures of the quilts that I have. I wish I had started an album and put the picture and perhaps the date and what happened to the quilt. I think that that would be good to have. I know a lot of where my quilts have gone, but there's so many more, I have no idea. And I have a picture of a quilt, and I thought, gee, I don't even remember that quilt. You know, usually you kind of have thoughts of, oh, yeah, I remember doing that. But there's a couple I have no idea. Make labels. Be sure and do that. I'm not good at that. And so often I will look at it and think, gee, I wonder when I finish this. Now, some of the quilts that go in quilt shows, and I've probably been in quilt shows for 25 years. So there's a tag on there that I put because it's required for the quilt show and it'll have a date on it. But there's so many others that I've done that I don't have labels on, and I really would like that. Let's see. I think that it's really important to be disciplined, which I am not. I find that I have stopped doing a quilt. And if you're going to do that, you need to document where you are, because you've got all these little pieces sitting around and have to reinvent the wheel to figure out where to go. So take the time. If you're not going to finish it at that point, document what you've got. And like I said, you don't have to reinvent the wheel. Those are a few things.
Those are great tips. Thanks. And I wanted to mention, it was fun to meet your daughter, Kathy Lipp. And you must be so proud of her being an author and podcaster and a speaker.
Yes, I am very proud of her.
And I wanted to mention on here that she has Clutter Free for Life. Did she learn a lot of that from you?
Oh, good to grief, no. And not from her father. Her father was a hoarder. Truly. He was limited to the garage and to his one room and to his half of the bedroom. His hobby was stamps. And they weren't neatly put in albums. Some were, a lot were. But there were stacks of things on the floor, and I still haven't gotten rid of them, and he passed 7.5 years ago. I don't know whether it's I can't do it or I won't do it.
Yeah.
But at some point, it's got to change.
It's hard to go through stuff like that. And I'm sure it has a lot of memories for you.
Yeah. Of course. Oh, one other thing I can think of that I really like, I love Ziploc bags. You know, when I've got things that I've cut out for a quilt, keep them separate, you know, maybe put a little note on it to what this is and what it's for and keep it all together. And I just use a lot of them. When I finish with one, I put them in this little tub I have and use it over and over and over again.
It's very helpful in organizing. Is there anything else you wanted to share to let your family and friends know about you?
I think this is going back a ways in our talking. Kind of how I met my husband. In Kansas City, I had always done sewing since junior high, making clothes for myself, and I decided I was going to take a sewing class at a Singer store that was close by us. That was when Singer was good stuff. And a woman taught the class, and she was older than me, you know, a few years. And so she contacted me we just kind of got along. We talked quite a bit. And every time I'd go into the shop for some reason, they had a small amount of fabric in there. We would get to talking. So she contacted me and said, I've got a brother who's coming to town. I think you two could get along. Would you like to meet him? And, you know, I always thought of myself, I was kind of a wallflower and I didn't date very much. And I kind of thought, well, why not? So I was invited to his parents' dinner for this evening. And then we, you know, just went out and got an ice cream, I think, and talked for a long time. He lived in Redwood City, California, and I was in Kansas City. He grew up in Kansas City, went to high school in Kansas City, and then went to the East Coast for a while, and then ended up on the West Coast. So we communicated a lot. So we got married. I moved to California. And sometime thereafter, his sister made a quilt and sent to us. And I think that kind of planted a seed for me to start quilting. We had a house. It was a two-story, but you went halfway up the stairs, and then there was a landing, and then the other way half up. And instead of using that on the bed, we hung that quilt on that landing. So that was fun to have. And, you know, looking at that every day, that kind of pushed my thinking, I think, also.
How neat.
We were married almost 48 years. 4 days more, and it would have been 48 years.
Oh, so close to your 50th. This was great. Thank you so much, Connie. I really appreciate it.
Okay, you take care.
You too. Bye.
Bye.
You can find more stories on aquilterslife.com or subscribe on your favorite podcast player so each episode will be downloaded automatically. Also, I want to hear about you and your wonderful quilts. Please contact me, Paula Chamberlain, through the website to set up an interview. And as always, thanks for listening.